Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's me. She's taking me out shopping and all that. Make me try on dresses.
Aye, you're going to be trying on dresses to walking on sunshine.
Episode 231 of 20 Minute Tims, and I am joined by Stephen.
Good evening.
And Melly.
Yes.
And I am your host, Jamie. And you've heard us talk about it a million times. Patreon.com/20MinuteTims is a platform that allows you to support this podcast in exchange for additional podcasts and videos. Over on Patreon, we do full Celtic coverage. We've got great Celtic features. So if you like the Monday podcast and you want to support us in some way, you can go over and check that out at patreon.com/20MinuteTims. The monthly support starts from less than the price of a McDonald's Happy Meal. You can't say any fairer than that. We had a
support
lot.
Support fan media, folks, is the important message. Support fan media because you've seen the alternative. You don't like the alternative. And if you don't support fan media, it'll go away and you'll be left with Chris Boyd forever. Forever.
Oh, no.
And ever.
Oh, no,
and Charlie Nicholas and Chris Commons. That's what you're going to be left with. Is that what you want? Because that's what's going to happen.
So that's it. Support fan media. That is the message from this podcast. We had a really good time on the Patreon last week covering a lot of the Celtic games. On last week's podcast, guys, the main topic of conversation was the team's form, the future of the manager and the performance of the team. Since then, we've booked a place at the Scottish Cup final. We've dispatched Aberdeen at Hampden to do that. We put in a worthy performance against Lille. So I suppose the big question on this week's podcast, Stephen, is are we seeing Neil Lennon turn this corner?
I thought the question was going to be, what were you worried about? Which you probably fittingly should be. I mean, yes, of course. Of course, a couple of positive performances are going to do that. We don't dig our heels in here. We don't just stick to an agenda no matter what. If the week's performances have been good, then of course that is signs of turning the corner. It's a start. There were five games into this sticky run of fixtures that we flagged up a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, we hadn't won a game prior to Aberdeen. So that's an alarm. I mean, I don't want to go overboard here, but it is form, a dip of form worthy of talking about. But to be totally honest, I've thoroughly enjoyed this week. It's been great. The start of the week, before we'd played a game, before we'd played any football, you know, the usual headlines are creeping out, all the sensationalist stuff. You know, Neil Lennon bites back and he's having a go back at this and he's fighting back. And I thought, oh, we're in for another long week in Timdom here. But on the pitch, it's very positive indeed.
Melly, we did say last week that Neil Lennon had two games, or he had not two games to save his Celtic job, but perhaps two more lives left. And we were going to give it to the international window. Obviously, the result against Lille didn't go our way fully, but it was a good good performance. And a lot of people were saying before the game that, you know, the performance was maybe more important than the result. Do you think, and obviously Aberdeen at Hampden, we'll talk about both these games in a bit more depth when we get to them, but Aberdeen at Hampden, I felt like Celtic were in control of that game for the full time, more or less. Do you think we'll see Neil Lennon turn the corner?
I'm not sure. This is maybe why I didn't want to get carried away last week and say, look, Lennon has to go, because a week is a long time in football, as we've seen. We wanted to give him this international break. It was two games this week and good performances in both and good results in both. Before the Lille game, if you had been offered a draw away at a team that is still unbeaten in the French league and all season, you'd have snatched the hand off you. So I'd have taken that and then going to Aberdeen, beating them fairly convincing. Much like the Rangers game where we felt that was coming, I felt the performances this week were coming as well, because as I said, I was starting to see shoots of positivity going back to the 4-2-3-1 suits, and more, arguably more importantly, we were getting key players back as well, and we've seen what they can do.
I found most of the coverage from the mainstream media anyway to be somewhat negative. I know the lamestream media
exactly.
to be somewhat negative about Celtic's trip to Lille. Nobody really gives Celtic much of a chance, but all the reporting after the game was Celtic let a 2-goal lead slip. That although that is true, there were certainly some positives there for sure, Melly.
Oh, definitely. To go to Lille and storm into a 2-goal lead, and we've seen with Celtic, what we can do is, how many times a season have you said, Stephen, that Celtic didn't turn up in the first half? Yeah. We were absolutely tremendous in the first half, and Blair highlighted it on the scout report we done on him, that you can get at them if you press their fullbacks and win the ball back. We got a goal from that, so Celtic obviously done their homework, done their work
on
them.
Or listen to our podcast. We're doing Celtic's homework for them, maybe. Maybe that's what's happening.
Possibly. So they've been listening and they found a way to get at Lille. And going into the game, I was just saying, please get a good performance. Don't go out there and get absolutely drubbed. But the more the game came, got closer to the game, I was saying, we can get something out of this and it can maybe spur us on to something. And look, we did. Going up 2-0 is a very tough ask in any team in Europe, because you're going to get the inevitable onslaught, and that's what we got. And to be honest, they were a very good team and a draw was a fair result, but Celtic were well worthy of the point as well.
There was a lot of talk pre-game about Neil Lennon's shape and his tactics, and particularly, you know, his team selections were coming under a lot of scrutiny in the past couple of weeks. I thought in particular our shape was very, very good. I thought we took into account that Lille were going to be a good team. We were well organised. We were compact in midfield, Stephen. There was, and the way that Celtic approached the game, not just the result, but the way we approached the game, it gave me cause for positivity.
Yeah, and I suppose that proves out in the first half performance. As Melly said, it was absolutely excellent. And Lille dominated the opening exchanges in terms of possession. But from memory, I think they only really threatened from a free kick that drew a decent save from Bain, a kind of one-handed thing. And maybe they had another one decent save, Bain. But in terms of them cutting Celtic open, I don't think they really managed to. I think it goes completely against what we've seen from Celtic recently, in that they take quite a while to get into games in the last maybe month or so. The first halves haven't been the better of the two halves for Celtic in previous performances, but with huge chances. Could arguably been more at half time. You even look at, I know it was well offside in the end, but Ayeti had the ball in the back of the net. It was well offside, but it was obvious that Celtic were giving Lille something to think about. I thought Ayeti made a real nuisance of himself in the game. I thought he was excellent. I thought he was such a handful, and his contribution to the goals was key.
This is actually Neil Lennon's fifth attempt at putting, well, not fifth attempt, that's perhaps a bit unfair, but this is Neil Lennon's fifth different midfield three this season. So he's had five different midfield combinations that he's tried out and obviously settled on McGregor and Charmed Brown against Lille, Melly.
Yeah, I think it was the right decision. In domestic games, I wouldn't play that, because I think you need somebody more forward-thinking than that, and somebody more of a number 10. But in this instance, it was ideal. Scott Brown sat in front of the defence with Ncham and McGregor ahead of him, meaning they could link up with the attacks. And with Christie and El Yunusi on either side, they come inside, giving us that sort of box in there, and then our full-backs can go on. So Celtic were quite compact. We didn't leave a lot of space in midfield. It's something we've been critical of Celtic at midfield in the past in Europe, that were one pass and were opened up in the midfield, but I didn't see that this time. I thought we were very compact, and because our two fullbacks get forward, this was perfect for it, because we moved into that sort of box and condensed the space. The fullbacks could go on. Both fullbacks are really good, so I'm happy to see that happen. And Christie and El Yunusi got involved in the game as well, so the formation was perfect for me. And as Stephen said, Ayeti done a lot of the hard work up there himself, but held up the ball and brought other players into play brilliantly. I thought he was tremendous. Maybe if he had to get his goal, it would have been the perfect striker's performance, but he just didn't get that. But his all-round play was great for me.
I was really encouraged to see Neil Lennon mix it up and not just go gung-ho, or not do maybe what Brendan Rodgers used to do in Europe and just try and impress our game on Lille. You know, Neil Lennon obviously studied the opposition. There was a lot of analysis of the opposition. He knew how to get a result out of this game, and it worked. Celtic have actually lost only one of their past 11 away matches in Europe.
Is that right? A good result?
Yeah, it's very impressive considering what we've seen in the past from Celtic and the European away stuff. Yeah, I mean, we've experienced years upon years of not being able to get a result away in Europe, so that is an encouraging stat.
Melly, you mentioned them. You said it was encouraging to see Molle and Rousey get involved in the game. I think I'm falling in love with Mohamed El Yunusi.
I really, too late, lads, but join me. Come on, come join me.
He's scored With three of his four shots on target in the Europa League this season, his first goal, however, in particular game, this game is absolutely sublime. But you'd mentioned it. We'd mentioned it on the scouting podcast. This is a thing we do if you're not familiar with it, listeners, is we commission a professional scout to look at Celtic's European opponents. And one of the things that Blair, the scout, said was, as you touched on earlier, that Celtic could get a lot of luck if they put pressure on the fullbacks. And that's how our first goal came about. But that touch from Ayeti to play Moyle Enouassi through was a thing of absolute beauty.
Oh, it was perfect. Absolutely perfect. And when El Yunus's going through there and Cham's up there with him, Ayeti's beside him, which makes the defence back off a wee bit and they're not quite sure what to do because they've been caught in the counter. And the finish from him is unbelievable. Not for me, because I love the guy and I know he's got it in the locker. He saves himself for these big games, but it was an absolutely smashing finish. We know he's got that. We just want to see it more. But now we're seeing it where he's playing in his natural position out in that left-hand side. He's got a striker up there who can hold the ball, win things, feed him early and go. And with Christie on the other side, I just think it was all about Celtic getting the balance. And we've got that recently. And that's why we've seen these better performances in attack. And El Yunus's finished was brilliant. It's horrible seeing these games behind closed doors.
Yeah.
But when you hear that hit the back of the net, you can appreciate how good a goal it was in the silence of the stadium.
Stephen, do you think the key to these performances when we're getting out El Yunus recently is getting him back into his more favoured left-hand side position?
Yeah, probably. I know we've all given him credit for being able to play a variety of positions, but sometimes it's only when you see the guy back where he belongs that you get the best out of him. El Yunus is a competent enough player to play in a couple of different positions, but I don't think there's certainly not in my mind, I don't think there's any doubt that his best position is out on the left, cutting inside. He can play off a central striker or maybe a wee bit more withdrawn in a number 10 role, but you know, I think we lose a lot from him in that case, and I think we've spent a long time this season wondering what's wrong with him. You know, he's in poor form, he's fallen off a cliff, he's got this big reputation and he's not delivering. Then as soon as he's back out onto that position, all of a sudden he's a completely different player.
There's no coincidence either that El Yunus's hit a decent run of form when he's got Laxalt behind him as well, a guy that can power on, go past him, he goes inside. When he had Greg Taylor there, it wasn't quite working, and when he's up front, he's only got one guy beside him, whereas if he's in on the left-hand side, he's usually got a number 10, he's got a striker, and he's got a fullback going beyond him and a midfielder supporting him, so we can get those overloads that we used to get, whereas if he's just up front or in the 3-5-2, it doesn't really work for him, I felt, but just Laxalt's made a difference and it's helped El Yunus's game definitely for me.
See, I've had one complaint about the goal, though. The keeper didn't go for it. I always feel it doesn't look as good when the keeper doesn't move. See if the keeper's at full stretch and the ball's bending around them. Pathetic for the keeper. He had to have some small victory. A wee note as well, we get a wee assist off a guy named Selick in the build-up.
They're right back. Is that Merman Selick that used to play for Rangers?
One of the last signings of the banter years, Merman Selick, absolutely tremendous. Hopefully he's a relation. I thought he was a cracking player, incidentally. Just that final thing on Ayeti before we move on is that it's a point I made on our live preview show that we do for our patrons on Patreon before every kickoff, 45 minutes before every game this season.
That video and content we are bringing to the game this year, that video content.
Can I just say, I've interrupted myself before I've even finished my point, but seriously good fun doing the preview show, by the way. It's chaotic at times, as some people might have seen with some of the outtakes videos, but an awful lot of fun to do. It is live, and anything can happen, but it's been brilliant so far. I really look forward to it. But what I said on that broadcast was that I'd been watching the Liverpool game the previous night, and they have Roberto Firmino, who's a guy who is established in this front three, an absolutely top-class front three, but he never scores, and the English media or, you know, wider fans never get on his back about it because they can appreciate that he brings an awful lot to the team that isn't just goals. He's great at finding space, and his link-up play is like second to none. You don't get that allowance playing in Scotland at all, do you? You're either scoring in every game or you're a downright flop, and all the articles are starting to creep out already. Oh, there's something wrong with Ayeti, there must be more to him than this. He wasn't even in the door, and Charlie Adam was saying he's not of a level we expect. But I'm sorry, but I'm not scoring in that game. As Melly's already said, if he'd scored, it would have been the perfect performance. But the amount he provides, even off the ball or holding the ball up or his link-up play, and particularly a lovely touch in the build-up to this goal, all that is very, very important. It's not just about getting yourself on the, I'll be on the score sheet. It's not just about that. He provides an awful lot.
As you say that, Stephen, like Firmino, I can't remember what it was, but it was either home or away. It wasn't until the last game of last season that he actually scored. It was his first goal at home or away in Europe. So it's something that's not really picked up on. But on Ayeti, after watching that game the other night, now, I love Hodgson Edward, we all do him. I'd make
we
a
all,
case
we
that
all, sorry, we all do them. It's a Freudian slip there.
It's true.
What did I say?
You said we'd all
said
do
them. We all do them.
We all love him, you know what I mean? But I'd maybe make the case that he's more effective at Albion Ayeti away from home in Europe. He offers us more because he gives us that hold up that Edward doesn't get. Now, we all know Edward's a great player. He can change the game at a drop of a hat. We've seen his goal in Copenhagen and all that. But Ayeti offers us something completely different away from home, and it's maybe a wee bit more effective.
And this is where Neil Lennon earns his management money. When things are not going right and a player's not performing, you either find a position in which he can perform, Elionussi, or you pick him out of the team and swap him around to get someone else who can come in and perform, Stephen, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't just stick to the tried and tested. His trusted lieutenants, such as a certain Mr. Gordon Strachan might have done
right
back in the day.
He's right good teammates.
Yeah. Aye. No, I totally agree. And Elionussi was absolutely brilliant in this game. It goes without saying. Yeah, the goals are very obvious. That's what you're obviously going to focus on, and it's going to grab most of the headlines. But the amount of work the guy puts on as well, see when he's in form like that and really firing and motivated, he absolutely puts in a shift. And I know that's a kind of, it's not the most insightful thing to say, but I feel like it's an important thing to say because you don't necessarily attribute a guy who is known as a creative player, like a winger who gets on the score sheet more often than not, you don't really focus on the amount of work he puts in. And I think Elionussi deserves that to be flagged up on occasion because he absolutely works his ass off.
There's a couple of players on the previous show that I'd said needed to, well, I don't want to use the phrase, but I said they needed to either use the facilities or leave the bathroom.
Yes,
kind of what I said.
Yes, deposit Elionussi, or leave, yeah.
Deposit or leave. Mo Elionussi was one. He certainly deposited. Ayeti was one. He certainly deposited. Another player was... And just before people jumped down my throat, I didn't mean leave the club. I just meant maybe get dropped out of the team. And another one was Frimpong. I thought his performances somewhat were lacking a wee bit. But he was another one who put in a really good performance. And what I've noticed with Frimpong recently is as well, he's obviously getting instructions to... If it's no working for him in the wing, come inside. Come inside and create an overload in that area in there. So he was doing that a lot in the Lille game, but I thought Frimpong was really good.
Yeah, and it bore out in his assist, what we've been crying out for him to do. Gets himself into great positions. Have a look up, son. Have a look up. And he done that, and the run from, because we have a Yeti in there causing havoc, Elionussi comes in behind him, right into the centre, drops off, gives him a shout. Frimpong looks up, perfect ball in. So a hard one, harder one than it looks to take that. And Elionussi finishes. It was a great goal because that's what we've been crying out for. Just Frimpong, get yourself into these great positions and look up and see if he can do it away from home against Lille. He'll be able to do it in Scotland, no bother. So it's just good for him. And as you said, Jamie, he's changing his game up a bit. We've seen in the Aberdeen game a few times, he came inside and then towards the end of the game, he went back on the outside. It gives defenders something to think about. He's not just one-dimensional. So he's improving.
Frimpong was much better, I thought, in this game because you're right. I think a lot of people were getting on his back, including we've never been guilty of getting on Frimpong's back, but I think we have been critical of his performances recently, particularly his, at times, just no good enough final ball. It's just poor, and I know we've given him a lot of leeway being a developing young, you know, exciting player, but some of his final balls, particularly against AC Milan, were just no good enough. So, but quite aside from getting forward and getting assists in this game, and he set one up for Ayeti as well. He just headed it over the bar from quite close range. It was a pretty decent cross and Ayeti just got under it. What is very important in these games, because it's a question that came up earlier on and we were talking about the perception of the result because Celtic went into a two-goal lead and then, you know, quote-unquote, surrendered it and drew 2-2. I don't think that tells the full story of the game. What I think is important to remember is that for the last probably half hour of that game, Celtic were under an absolute onslaught to the point where I was watching it and I thought this could end up 4-2 or something after us being 2-0 up, and, you know, that's what Lille were looking like. But what Frimpong can sometimes provide in that scenario is the ability to just gain a few yards. See if you're able to get it to Frimpong and he can get us up the pitch a wee bit, even if he just runs into a blind alley and wins a throw-in or something, It takes the pressure off just that tiny amount for Celtic to get back into their positions and back focused and just take that, as I said, that onslaught off.
And it's that game management as well. It's that game management we were talking about in the Aberdeen game, you know, being a bit smarter, using players like Frimpong. We saw it again in the Aberdeen game at Hampden with Lee Griffiths, maybe a wee bit premature when Lee Griffiths ran the ball in the corner with about six minutes to go. But you're right, Stephen, it's utilising these players and thinking about the game a wee bit more and having a bit more confidence. Even though Neil Lennon said there's nothing wrong with the confidence in the side, I don't necessarily believe him. I don't think he's going to come out and say, I have got six guys in there bereft of confidence. He's not going to, I don't think he's going to say that. A boy who's definitely not lacking in any confidence, though, is Diego Laxalt. What a performance. Now, you could tell this was one of these performances that I'm surprised people only started talking about it after the game somewhat, because we were discussing the game on the Discord and I'd said to him, I need to see Laxalt's stats after this game because he's on fire tonight again.
Yeah.
13 tackles, 77 touches, 88.5% pass accuracy. The 13 tackles is the most that any player has made in the Europa League in a single match.
Quite literally a record-breaking performance from Laxalt. It was, yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. And did we not see a couple of weeks ago we think people might be sleeping on Laxalt? I can't remember if we did, but he has been the best player on the team since he had joined. Yeah. The best player on the team since he joined.
What Laxalt is he is just a significant upgrade. He is just
Tierney, you're dead right. You're spot on.
I haven't gone quite to that extent just yet. Right, what Laxalt is yet another proof, if it were needed, he is the latest in a line, such as Fraser Forster was, in proof that you should never settle for what you've got just because you think they're okay or they'll do as a squad player or they're good backup or such and such. My problem with Greg Taylor was never that I don't think he's a good player. I think he's all right. But my point all along was that I think Celtic are capable of going out and getting a better player than Greg Taylor in that position. And that's absolutely right. They could go out and get Laxalt. I know people take against loan signings for some reason, but I don't really care because if Celtic can't afford a player like that full-time, it doesn't really matter. Just go out and get him anyway. What we need is the best players available to Celtic on the pitch that are attainable at all times. And Laxalt proves that Celtic are capable of going out and doing that. Left-back might not have been a problem position, but the reason I bring up Fraser Forster is because that's what we thought prior to him coming in. We thought, we're okay with Craig Gordon. We're okay with Scott Bain. We'll survive. But as soon as a guy like Fraser Forster comes in, you think, that's what was available if you just go out and get it. If you just push the ball out and go and get a player like that. And I think that's exactly what Laxalt represents. You just go out and get a better player. And I don't see any of this to have a go at Greg Taylor. I'm just saying, look, this is kind of what I was angling at the whole time. You can just go out and get a guy like that. Just do it.
I don't think there's any doubt that Laxalt's better than Greg Taylor, better than Bowling Goalie. I heard you laughing there. It seems like such an obvious thing to say, but the improvements that he's made to this team already, particularly as you said, forming those partnerships with Elianoussi, he's such an intelligent player. In some of the games when he's defending, in this game in particular, he never commits one with the other. See, when he's against two men, his positioning is always spot on, so he's never left hanging out to dry. If the ball gets played through, he's always leaves himself enough space and enough yardage to catch up with him. I think he's a really, really, really tremendous fullback, and I think he could be the key to pushing the Celtic team on, because we've said that if we get a good fullback on the left to complement Frimpong on the right, fixing that balance in the team that you're always talking about, Melly, this team will really push on.
Yeah, we've seen it at the start of the season when we were in the 4-2-3-1 and then when we went to the 3-5-2, as soon as it goes out to the left-hand side, it didn't work. Greg Taylor, he can't take on a man. He's not got that burst of pace. He put in the odd early cross, but he just didn't have it. And Neil Lennon tried to get Laxalt last year. There was maybe people, myself included, worrying when he was 3-5-2. Look, can he do it in a back four? Because you're a bit more forward-thinking as a wing-back. Is he going to be a good defender? His tackling, his positioning has all been spot on. Some of those challenges where he just nicks the ball away, somebody goes to go past him, nobody get past him and whipped in any balls. He was absolutely tremendous. I think there's more to come from him going forward, to be honest. I think he's looked solid at the back. He's tackling, he's positioning, as you says, doesn't let a guy go past him. But I think he's only going to get fitter, in my opinion. So if he can get forward more and give us more what Kieran Tierney done, we could be looking at the perfect left back for this team. Because as I've been saying, I don't want to keep repeating it, all Celtic have really lacked is a bit of balance and confidence. The team's there, the players are there, we just haven't had everybody available. And there's no coincidence we're starting to look better when we get the better players available now.
Well, Lex, much like with Frimpong on the other side, it's a comparison that keeps coming up. I've already given Frimpong credit for being able to get out of the box for Celtic and get up the pitch a bit. But likewise on the other side, see if you've got a guy who just, for absolutely nothing, will he let anyone past him on that left-hand side, particularly as I've already described, Celtic are really under the cosh towards the end of the game, particularly after Ayer was unfortunately forced off with an injury as well. Celtic are really up against it, and I'm thinking, right, this could be anything from Lille, but if you've got a guy like that who is absolutely determined to let nothing past him whatsoever, yeah, I mean...
He was determined, he was a hellacious nightmare for those players.
Yeah, when Laxalt came to the club, we expected him to be this... Yeah, a bit of a dribbler, quite quick, and he's likely to get forward. I really wasn't expecting him to be as effective defensively as he's shown to be, and particularly in this game against good opposition. Let's not make any mistake about that. They're a good team, Leo. Then it goes back again to what I was talking about with how the final result, if you just read the goals and when they were scored, doesn't tell the full story of it. Leo are a great team. Just now, I know they're not like a major European club, but they're a team who are undefeated in a major league, and there isn't a game this season in which they've failed to score. So to keep them at bay for the length of time after the equaliser was in no small part down to Laxalt's performance.
He was an absolute monster. You look at him and you think, like, he's a bit of a thin guy. He came with the glasses and the braids, and you think, what is this we're dealing with here? Is this like a flair player? Is this guy going to be a luxury player? You just look at him on the face.
Is he Celtic's speckiest left back ever? Or possibly even speckiest fullback ever?
He's our speckiest. Is he not the speckiest player ever?
Maybe.
Oh, Harold Brattback was specky, wasn't he?
Harold Brattback's very specky.
He wasn't as specky as Laxalt. Laxalt is specky. He is.
He's specky, but one of his main attributes is tenacity. He can win these tackles, but... He's pressing, he's harrying the whole time. He doesn't give them a chance. Sometimes he's pressing so much. I'm like, simmer down, son. Simmer down, that's plenty. But him and Elianoussi down that left-hand side, they work so hard. Not many teams are going to make much change out of them. They're harrying, they're constantly harassing. It's looking great. So if Celtic can keep the two of them fit, keep this formation, it's another weapon in the armoury for us.
There was a joke from on this podcast, so listeners used to tweet us in and talk about the portion of the podcast where we got to talk about Scott Brown. We would call it Brown Town. Have you noticed, I don't know if anybody's noticed, that I've certainly noticed, that all that talk about Scott Brown has kind of dissipated now. There is no Scott Brown section on this podcast. In particular, I thought he was really good against Leon. I thought he was really good against Aberdeen. However, if you can find something that means town that rhymes with Duffy, then we can certainly have that bit in, because it's time
Duff
to talk
stuff.
About... Duff stuff.
There we go.
It's time to talk some Duff stuff. Shane Duffy, again, I think his improvement was shown in the Aberdeen game, but there's no doubt about it that he was a bit flustered at times in this Lille game, a bit panicked. He gave away a penalty. Less than vintage stuff.
Yeah, it was the usual Celtic in Europe. Just get through the first 10 minutes. We've done that. We've got a 2-0 lead, and I'm just looking at the clock, 5 minutes to half time. Get to half time. Do anything, just get to half time. And it was a simple ball through. All he has to do is stand him up, allow Ayer to get back round, because Ayer was the defender in front of him. And he just makes this rash challenge. It was just a bit dense from him. There's no need for it. It's a mistake he doesn't make if he's feeling confident, if he's not had the scrutiny he's had recently. But I think he's just trying to maybe impress too much. Yeah. He just didn't need to make the challenge. It was silly. I think it was marginally outside the box, but it was definitely a foul. It was so needless, and it allowed them to get back into the game. But luckily for us, they didn't.
I think Duffy's going to be fine. Honestly, I think Duffy's going to be fine. I think he's going to be. I think Duffy's got a bit of a scatterbrained approach to his time at Celtic. I think, judging on what Neil Lennon says, I think it's been. I think the team have struggled with the stop start of it. Of everything. I think Duffy's maybe struggling with the focus on his game. I think he maybe underestimated what he was walking into a wee bit. I don't so much think that he's come up here and we've been sold a dud, for example. I don't think he's an absolute donkey that we've had a look at and thought he was a good player. I just think he's struggling to adapt a wee bit at Celtic. But when you struggle to adapt, Stephen, you just want to be concentrate on the basics. Do the simple stuff, bring it back a wee bit, man, and just concentrate on the basics. Head it away, kick it away, put it in a rosette, you know, that sort of stuff. Just ease up.
The right decisions, ultimately, is what he needs to be making rather than...
Do more things right. Would that be your pep talk to Shane Duffy?
Be good at football.
Do better, yeah. What we said all along about Duffy was that forget all the Premier League defender, international this, forget all that sort of stuff. You strip all that away, what you're left with is a footballer who deserves and needs the same settling in period that everyone else does. Now, not everyone settles in the same way. Look at Laxalt, he's come in and looks like he's been here for years, right? And that's fine. Other people take two seasons to settle in and play the way they can. Duffy deserves that, deserves a bedding in period. But what I would say about Duffy is that it's kind of running out now. We need him to get his head in the game and focus and make the right decisions, because...
Do you think there's a bit of luck involved in Duffy, though? Because there's Ayer got an injury in that game there, and Bitton had to come in for the Aberdeen game. Would you think that if it hadn't been for Ayer's injury, we could have been looking at a back partnership of Ayer and Bitton in the Aberdeen game? Do you think Duffy's at that stage where maybe...
Oh, the good old Champions League qualifying pairing in there.
It's going to be... It's going to be Ambrose and O'Connell again.
But what I'm saying is, Stephen, do you think it was getting to the point, or it is getting to the point with Duffy, that maybe needs a couple of games out of the team just to re-find his form and calm down a bit? But unfortunately, the way the injuries have fallen, we can't do that.
Yeah, probably. I think I agree with both of those things, that it probably did need a wee break. Maybe an international break will help him out coming up. But what we've seen with the Aberdeen game is that he looks a little bit better already. What I mainly think about Duffy is that we've been down the roads of talking about his defensive partners, his style of play. We wondered if Celtic have brought in a player that is wholly unsuited to the way Celtic play, and being a possession-based team, a team that's on the front foot all the time, maybe he's just unsuited to it all. But to be honest, those are kind of looking like excuses just now, because what happens is he keeps just making the wrong decision. And I'm not saying he's a bad player. What I think he is trying too hard, and he's doing the defensive version of what we've seen strikers do before, where they come into the team and they're just shooting for everywhere. They're trying desperately to score to get their name out there and establish themselves in the team. I think Duffy might just be doing that at the back. He's getting himself into less than favourable scenarios where he's having to make poor challenges, such as against Leo. He's making the wrong decisions at times. And I think he needs to be allowed to settle himself into the team, but also we kind of need him for him to turn up now, if you know what I mean. Like, this is long enough. He's maybe had 10, 12 appearances for Celtic now. We kind of need him to settle in, because, not because we're being harsh on him, but because we need him. We need him to defend better than he is.
Yeah, what Stephen's saying is right. Look, Duffy's not been good enough. We brought this guy, we expect him just to come in like Laxalt and just settle in. He maybe did that at the start with a good few, with the four clean sheets before the Rangers game. So, but he hasn't been good enough recently. I really hope that moment where he gives away the penalty and Scott Bain saves it was the turning point from him, because if they had scored that, he maybe could have crumbled. But even with a save, it maybe gives the team a lift and also gives him a lift. And seeing the second half, I thought he settled down and I thought he was great. He was just doing the basics and getting everything done right. Did a good few clearances, and it sort of went into the Aberdeen game where I thought he looked a lot more confident, just done the basics and looked a lot better. So hopefully that wee penalty save maybe spurs him on now.
What did you make of Scott Bain in goal? Because I feel like Scott Bain's getting a lot more opportunities to make saves than Barkas is. Yeah. And because he's making those saves, people are going, oh, he's a better player than Barkas. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not so sure. One thing I think Scott Bain brings to the team is he's more vocal than Barkas. He's definitely more vocal than Barkas. I think he brings a wee bit of organisation to the back that wasn't there before. Again, coming back around this thing, confidence. I think Barkas is maybe just struggling for a bit of confidence. I don't know if he can speak English. I think he does. But I'm hesitant at this point to reach back into Celtic history and pull Scott Bain to the forefront and say that he's a better player than Vasilis Barkas, Melly.
Yeah, look, Barkas took a lot of stick for conceding two goals against Rangers and three against AC Milan. I'd say maybe one of them was his fault. Scott Baines came in two games prior, in the Lille game and the Aberdeen away game, conceded five goals and managed to get praise out of it because he's made a save. As you say, Jamie, it just seems he's had the opportunity to make saves where Barkas didn't. And I still think Barkas will turn out to be the better keeper. Scott Bain maybe at fault for one of the Aberdeen goals. I thought he was pretty poor on that and he didn't even move for the penalty, but comes into this game, makes a penalty save, and everybody's saying, oh, well, maybe Scott Bain's the man. He's just maybe got a wee bit luckier. But if I still think Barkas long term will be Celtic's goalkeeper.
I think on Bain, this is a game, another example of a game in which everybody got to do their stuff a bit. El Yunusi got to do his stuff. Shane Duffy got to do some Duff stuff. And Scott Bain certainly got to do his stuff as well. Saved a penalty, made a couple of other impressive one-handed saves. And also,
the free kick one was a bit of a camera save, wasn't it?
True. But also made a complete arse of a ball. He spilled it.
Horlicks.
And then Leo, yes, he made a Horlicks of a deep ball into the box where Leo hit the bar from. So I think we got to see all of the Scott Bain repertoire in this game as well. But in fairness, I don't think a lot has been made about the goal that he conceded that he's near post. I think that's quite harsh because it's at point blank range and basically just kind of went through him. I don't think it's fair to criticise him too much for that. He could have spread himself and blocked it, of course, but the recent run of form hasn't really changed my mind on what I think about Scott Bain. I think he's just a decent keeper. I don't mean to sound like I'm having a go at him here. I just think he's an okay to decent goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's beaten it, he's near post, but just because you're beating it, you're near post, doesn't make it a goalkeeper's fault. It's a flick on from the corner for their first goal, and it's Ryan Christie lets his man go. If he doesn't do that, if he's concentrating instead of watching the ball, that opportunity doesn't arise and Celtic can hold on a bit longer. It was a goal that you're just trying to... You always like to get those 10 minutes after half-time without conceding, because then you know, look, we've got a two-goal lead going into the last half hour. Can we hold on to that? But if you concede that goal within the first 10 to 15 minutes of the second half, it gives the other team something to really go at you. And a team of Leo's quality are always going to come at you. And it was disappointing for Celtic to concede from a set piece of all things, because all he had to do with Christie was mark his man and not let him run off from behind him. And the chance doesn't come about, but it lets them back into the game after that. So it was disappointing.
You know, Leo eventually equalising the game, getting themselves a point out of it. The second goal, again, I didn't think it was much of Celtic's fault. They could have maybe defended earlier a wee bit better, but there's a bit of a scramble in the box. Melly, the ball ends up in the back of the net.
Yeah, a couple of deflections, a couple of block crosses. It just didn't go for Celtic. And at the time of the goal, you just felt, oh, this was coming.
Yeah.
Two each probably was a fair result at that time. And Celtic were sort of looking tired.
Tiring.
Yeah, to be fair to them, we sort of changed it up, brought on some subs, changed the shape a wee bit, and we got a bit more solid because it was a tough game. And after that, Leo sort of gassed out as well. So there was a few questions over Celtic's fitness, but I felt the same about Leo. They were pounding us from the second half up to about the 70th minute, and then they started to fall out it, and it sort of evened out. So it was one of those games where you think, look, 2-2, it's a fair result in the end, and Celtic would have taken it before. But just the way it panned out, we could have done a wee bit better. But as I've said, that was a really good team as well.
Celtic conceded a goal by Celic in the 67th minute.
Yes.
Slap in the face, that, isn't it? Absolutely disgrace.
So that's us. Our first points in the Europa League. We've got a couple of home games.
Can I get granny off the mark?
We've got Prague coming up, a couple of home games. You know, Celtic, I said before the game that the Europa League was a bit of a distraction for me. I thought Celtic maybe do without it in their current form. How wrong was I? Because it just showed you know, a good performance leads to another good performance, leads to another good performance. Doesn't matter.
Changes your mind. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly your mind can be changed if you just see a little bit of positivity from your team, and that's exactly what we got. Suddenly we've all got a sunnier disposition going into more European games where you think, well, going into these groups, you've always got your eye on the third best opposition, thinking, right, if we can take 6 points off them, if we can get an away draw, and one of those has happened now. So every reason to believe that there's all to play for in this group.
And not even for that, Stephen, from Celtic's point of view, you know what? I don't know why I would view the Europa League a distraction, because there's no doubt that the good performance of the Europa League brings the morale up, brings the confidence up, gives them something to build on. And they went into the Aberdeen game after having played Aberdeen recently, and we were much better than Aberdeen, absolutely much. Not if you listen to Derek McInnes, though. He thought the Aberdeen were the better team and they should have got something. Unfortunately for the boss, he was haunted by the ghost of Tom Rogic on this occasion. Okay, terrific joke wasted on you guys, but the Bruce Springsteen fans amongst us will understand
the boss?
The boss.
Okay. I've seen him live.
This mic on? Still went off my head.
The talk of the town, the talk of this game, rather, has to be Tom Rogic. I did a video for the patrons where I ranked the Celtic team on one of these tier list makers. You might be familiar with it. I picked the elite members of the team, the good members of the team that will contribute, the mostly subs and the do-nothings. And to my shame, well, not to my shame, actually, I put Tom Rogic as a mostly sub. Not my fault. Tom Rogic hasn't completed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
30 games for season since 2015. He's not completed 30 games a season for us since 2015, gone on 5 years. So when I thought Tom Rogic was going to mostly be a sub, you can't really blame me. He looked like a player that was out of the club. He was on his way to Qatar. But as you said, you almost have forgot. Stephen, this is a reminder, Melly, Stephen, for anyone, including Derek McInnes and Aberdeen, of how good a player we have here.
We all know the qualities of Tom Rogic, and he comes in and he does it again. The guy's a touch of class, and we go into this game against Aberdeen. We'll just bring in Rogic, we'll just bring in Odson Edward. No wonder Derek McInnes got it wrong when you're bringing in players like that. Why I was so confident going into this Aberdeen game was one of the reasons was Tom Rogic in there, because he just gives us so much. He's so creative, he can do that, get the ball in the half turn, get it out wide. And when I seen the front four, the three behind Edward and Christie, Rogic and Elyounoussi behind Edward, I thought, look, there's goals in there, and if they're not scoring, they're going to set each other up. And that's exactly what Tom Rogic does. Set up two goals, canter.
Even previously against Aberdeen, very recently, set up a couple of goals without really doing much in the game.
Yeah.
They must have, I think you said on the reaction podcast, Jamie, they must have nightmares about Tom Rogic, and I think that's absolutely true. I'm so glad we're getting this opportunity to talk about Tom Rogic in these terms again, because I think the last time we spoke about him at any great length was when he'd been heavily speculated as moving to Qatar, and I spoke about how...
You wrote his obituary, didn't you?
I basically did, yeah. But I spoke about how I was kind of resigned to him leaving, because it was widespread rumour at the time that he was all but out the door going to Qatar. So I'd come to terms with him leaving, but I just thought, not like this. Not like this, Tom. Not to Qatar. Don't leave me all the way to Qatar, because I'll never see you again. I'm never going to keep up with Qatari football. So I'm so glad that he's back and doing what we all know he can do. The most heroic Australian since that Democracy Manifest guy off the internet.
Emil is succulent Chinese meal. Is that how you're competing?
Witness the headlock here. See you.
Your jiu-jitsu well.
Yeah, that guy. For people who don't know what we're talking about, you have missed out. The best guy on the internet.
We don't have time to explain memes to you people. We're here to
educate
talk about
yourself.
We're here to talk about self.
Do better.
But there is no doubt, Stephen, that Tom Rogic's role in this game, finding space in between the Aberdeen lines helped very much to the fact that Aberdeen wanted to go man for man for Celtic, because Derek McInnes once again overestimated how good a team and how good a manager he is. That turn, he's one of the only players, Melly, that can do that on the half turn. That he takes a ball into feet, turns in his face and goal almost immediately, and he's ready to play someone through. And see, when there's someone that quick in that role, it opens up so many opportunities for Celtic. And not only that, I think the players love playing with Tom Rogic. Things are just starting to come together. That front four of Christie, Rogic, Elian Hussein, Edward would frighten the life out of any team, most teams, but for the purposes of this exaggerated point, any team would be terrified looking at that lineup when they're on it.
Yeah, there was a point in the very start of the game where the ball was played into him and he did that turn, as you say, and just ran at the defence. And I thought, oh, we could be onto one from Rogic here today. As I said, this is why I wanted to play this formation. I think this is what suits the players. I think it's the formation that we can get many of our better players into. And Tom Rogic is one of them. He can sit in that number 10 and just dictate. If you get Christie out wide, Elian Hussein is better position. It's more goals. And my problem with the 3-5-2 was I felt, yes, we had two strikers, but behind that, there wasn't many goal scorers. In this, there's loads of goal scorers. And more importantly, what we've got is more creativity. And Tom Rogic is key to that, alongside Christie and Elian Hussein. And we've seen it with the two assists. The first one, he drifts out beside Christie, gives Christie the ball. And as you said, Jamie, Aberdeen's man-marking thing, once that breaks down, one player lets his man go in Christie, and he's got a free shot and goal. Now, it's a tough shot, like Elian Hussein's, but when you've got the quality of Christie or Elian Hussein, and you can bend it into the back of the net, oh, tremendous, another tremendous goal. And it's just another one, like, getting your good players on the pitch, getting them playing, bit of confidence as well. Does Ryan Christie, well, maybe Ryan Christie's a bad example, does he take that shot on a couple of weeks ago after a defeat? Does Elian Hussein take that shot on a couple of weeks ago? You just need something to go in, and when that Elian Hussein goal went in against Lille, everything changed for Celtic. Now we're taking on these shots, we're taking on men, and it's coming off.
Trying hard passes, it is, it's starting to come out. And I watched the Celtic unique angle thing on Celtic TV for Ryan Christie's goal. It's porn. They shouldn't be showing that on the Celtic Twitter account. It's absolute filth. That Ryan Christie goal. What was your favourite, Ryan Christie or Elian Hussein? What was your favourite goal?
Inappropriate material on Twitter, was it?
But I'm going to make you pick, though. What was your favourite?
Elian Hussein.
Elian Hussein, was it?
Elian Hussein, yeah. Well, I'm not going to argue too strongly against it, but I would probably go for Christie just because of what I said earlier, because the keeper was at full stretch and couldn't get near it, whereas that pathetic slug for Leo just let it go in and pretended he couldn't get to it. So, yeah, I'll go for Christie purely on that basis.
I'm going to go for Christie as well. Over more than you say in the Leo game, I'm going to go for Christie. It was in the rain.
Nice seeing it hit the back of the net with the rain and all that.
The aesthetic of it was much better. Plus, I've said it before, I love Ryan Christie as a player. He's one of the players that's capable of doing that in the Celtic team. And we, as you said, Melly, we need more of that. We need more of the players trying to make things happen and taking those shots on.
Well, continuing the Tom Rogic theme, the loving for the Wizard of Oz, his contribution for the second goal, Elian Hussein's tapping, was obviously telling. But see, if you watch that back, Tom Rogic has played so wide in that move where he chases it down. What you would expect a normal player to do is just clip that off a defender and win a corner. That's all he needed to do there. Yeah, that's all he had to do there, right?
And not in Rogic land.
Well, exactly. You would have been like, yes, well done, Rogic. You chased that down, chased down a lost cause and won a corner. But he's thinking to himself, no, wait a minute, we're pish at corners, so what I'm going to do is just hang it in the goal line and somebody could knock it in. Is that cool? Everybody on board with that instead of the corner? Yeah, fine, I'll do that then. So, what a great decision. And to be able to clip it and just hang it, as I say, hang the ball on the goal line from that position is absolutely magical from him.
Is this Celtic's best 11?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
That's why I'm here. That's why I get paid the big bucks. That's tough questions.
That front four, I've just mentioned how good Ayeti was in midweek, and a different game, guys, different players can come in, but yes, it is.
No, you're wrong. I know I asked the question, but you're wrong, because what we need is we need Ayer in there somewhere. And I would still put Barkas in there. Let me just remind you of the conversation we had 7 minutes ago about Barkas and Bain. Stephen, though, If you got Barkas and Ayer into that team, would that be Celtic's best 11? See how I set Melly up there?
I would also make a play for the return of Ayer and Julian as a partnership, because I think it is, you know, kind of tried and tested.
Completely forgot about Julian.
Not to say that Duffy can't break that up, not to say he can't establish himself, because, you know, he hasn't been good enough recently. We've been over this tonight, but he can get better. He can possibly break that up, but what I would say is they have more of a proven history of being able to play well together, and they were brilliant last season, so I'd probably have them as my first choice partnership just now.
Listeners will be wondering, Jamie, why did you ask that question when the obvious answer was no? Well, I asked that question. I asked that question to make this point. No matter what 10 you pick, they're obviously going to be improved with Nodson Edwards on the side, because that man looked really, really sharp.
Yep, a couple of weeks out, and he came in there, had a good chance quite early on where maybe Odson Edward in a week or two buries that, because he's just his first game back and all that. Well, first start back. But again,
I still thought the touch was there. The touch was there. The touch holding there. Players off, the holding the ball up, all that sort of stuff.
Into the second half going towards the end, when you thought maybe he's run his race now, it's about time we take him off, and he keeps the ball up over three of them and just flicks it over him, flicks it over him, flicks it over him. The guy is tremendous, and it's another one to add to the Arsenal, and we've all said
that. Don't say that, Edward. You do not add him to the Arsenal.
that's the last thing we need.
The last thing anyone wants.
As we were saying, look, Celtic didn't play well against Rangers. Well, missing a main striker, missing a Yeti. There were so many players out then. It was all a big furore about how he's not playing well. A couple of good performances, and look at the options we've got now. We've got Odson Edwards starting with a Yeti starting during the week. Lee Griffiths comes on. Klamala's so far down the pecking order now, whereas a couple of weeks ago we were bemoaning the squad. Another guy, Neil Bitton, strolls it. But Edward, once he gets up to full speed, he'll be spanking in the goals again. He'll just need that first goal. But his all-round performance, much like a Yeti during the week, top class.
Just shows you the difference in perceptions with some players at times, because of how Duffy's been playing. Beaton came in and played very well, but he had one big howler where he basically just passed. He just set an Aberdeen player straight in. Probably should have done better with it. If Duffy had done that, we'd have been absolutely screaming about it. We'd have been burning the house down about it. On Aberdeen, they were fairly pathetically Aberdeen at the end of the day. They started okay. They should have scored, but it was Hedges, who I thought was okay in the league game against Celtic, had that chance where he was set through by an absolutely brilliant ball, and he just bottled it. He just cut back in his left foot and the chance was gone, and that really was all they created the entire game from memory.
After the tough game Celtic had in Lille, and it was tough, look at the second half, we thought, oh, Celtic are sort of flagging a bit here, we're looking tired. Surely going into that game, McInnes should have done exactly what he'd done last week, sit in and be very, very difficult for Celtic to break down, because in that first half last Sunday against Aberdeen in the league game, Aberdeen didn't have many chances, but they got that penalty just before half-time out of nothing, really. But they were so compact and hard to break down, it didn't look like Celtic were getting anywhere, despite playing pretty well. Whereas in this game, he brought back in Cosgrove and sort of went for it a bit more. If you're a manager seeing a team playing Thursday when you've had a full rest, a tough game on Thursday, surely you'd just make it difficult for them, especially in those conditions at Hampden. It was a horrible day, but McInnes went out and just done his usual at Hampden, caked the bed a bit again, tried to go at Celtic, and we picked them off early on, and it was game, set, match. Celtic started off quickly and they were able to tear them apart, whereas if he'd just sat in, soaked it up a bit more, he could have got it going, and then got into the second half, made it difficult for Celtic, and they'd have tired, but he handed it straight to Celtic in the plate.
And we were happy to receive it, because Aberdeen were absolutely toilet on the day. And one player in particular who infuriates the life out of me is Lewis Ferguson.
He's a decent
enough wee player, but I'm honestly, he's such a little rat. He's one of these players who simultaneously hacks and throws himself to the ground at every opportunity. And this is probably my second time saying this, because it's the second time he was doing it. And I thought the referee in the game bought everything that Aberdeen, every time an Aberdeen player hit the deck, regardless of whose fault it was, the referee was blown for it. It was Colin, wasn't it?
It's Don Robertson.
It was Don Robertson. You're quite right. The booking on Laxalt was ridiculous. The guy who kicked Duffy and got a free kick awarded for kicking Duffy.
And was it Christie that got thrown down towards the end? There was the one in Aigetti as well where he got absolutely poleaxed. It was chaos.
And it's Derek McInnes that sets his team out to do this. And that's why I say respect the tan, not the man, when it comes to Derek McInnes. That's the way I approach Derek McInnes. But look, Celtic have found themselves on the way, Stephen, to another cup final for a quadruple treble. There's, you know, There was talk about...
Now, isn't it? It's fairly silly now, isn't it? Quadruple,
was that 35 cup matches in a row or something Celtic have won? There was talk before the game. The BBC had an article out that got a lot of attention. Do Celtic fans really care about last season's treble? I care about it. Yep. I certainly care about it. I want Celtic to win as many trophies as we can get our grubby little paws on.
grasping little paws, yeah.
And you'll bet your bottom dollar that Neil Lennon wants his chubby little fingers on that trophy because he is, if he wins this one, this season, last season, whenever it is, that'll be a treble for him. And that'll put him in with Brendan Rodgers, Martin O'Neill, Jock Stein as a bona fide, on his own, standing on his two feet, a treble winning Celtic manager. This is an important thing for us, isn't it?
His snus stained chubby little digits, his pink little digits on that trophy. Yeah. I mean, it's just garbage from the lamestream media, as you called it earlier. Of course, it's important to get as many trophies as you possibly can. It's ridiculous to claim otherwise. No one is getting bored of it. I mean, that's just projection. No one from this side of the fence ever says that. No one ever says, I'm bored of winning trophies. People just assume from the other side of the fence, oh, you must be bored of winning trophies. No, I can assure you, we're not. On the cup run itself, it's something we do probably at least once a season where you have to allow yourself the opportunity to look back on what an astonishing achievement that is.
Yeah.
To have won all those cup games. And I'm leaving aside the leagues because the leagues are a very different animal from the cup. What makes cups so special and so appealing to fans, what makes the FA Cup so big down in England, still an enduring trophy down there, is the idea, the possibility that anything could happen. There could be an upset along the line. And that has never once happened to Celtic in all of Alawa. This time.
Was it Alawa? Is it Alawa? And Dunfermline?
Dunfermline
was a draw, wasn't it? Yeah, but...
Aye. Those are the toughest games we've had.
There hasn't been so much as even close to a giant killing along the way, or even played tough games in there as well, played against Rangers, played against Aberdeen several times, played against Hearts, Motherwell when they were good, and no one's beaten Celtic, and that's incredible, absolutely incredible. When you think... All those cliches about how, aye, but they're one-off games, anything could happen, you know, the conditions could play their part. Celtic have played in it all and won them all in the last four seasons, and that is astonishing.
Stephen, I'll have to remind you of last December, that League Cup final, Rangers were the better team, mate.
Oh, well, that says
on the trophy.
Yeah, so on the Scottish Cup, it says winners, Celtic at Struts, but Rangers were really, really good that day. And that teases up nicely for a final against Hearts, who managed to get through against Hibs because Hibs basically Hibs'd it. Robbie Nielsen's Hearts, a day before my birthday, 20th of December. So now all the listeners know there's no excuse for me not to get presents and cards. And that's what it'll take for Celtic to complete the quadruple treble. Up next for Celtic, Motherwell in the league, Sparta Prague in Europe. A couple of weeks ago, we read out Neil Lennon's fixture list. We pointed out all the tough games he had coming up. We thought this was ominous. So far, it's been okay. We need to get back to winning ways in the league. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Positive result against Sparta Prague can put us in fairly decent stead to progress in Europe and things start looking up a wee bit. And we'll be covering all these games over on our Patreon with preview shows, reaction podcasts, scouting and blogs. We do an awful lot over there. It's well worth checking out. Patreon.com/20MinuteTims if you've not done that already. Now, every week we pick a winner of our favourite review on iTunes or Podcast Addict. You go on there, leave us a 5-star review. We pick our favourites and we send you a 20-Minute Tim's gold badge. Stephen, who's this week's winner?
Several entries this week, all very impressive. Some too long to read out, but if I may be so bold, two have stood out for me today. Again, I'll be in touch and send you out a badge, but two deserve read out today. And what is absolutely crucial here is that they have included a way in which we can contact them. You have to include your Twitter name or something so we can get a hold of you. Don't get me wrong, we appreciate the reviews anyway. It all goes towards, you know, helping us out massively. So thank you
for
trying
to hit 1,000. That's the big target.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So the Wall Show was in there and he said, since listening to the Duff Luck podcast, I have used that Ace Ventura 2 reference 3 times in a work situation. I'm definitely going to use it more. Good work, lads. Walsh. So
for anyone who didn't listen to Duff Luck, Stephen, you might have to remind them of what your Ace Ventura reference was.
What was it? I think I just said, he much better fighter than you when referencing Lille. Yeah, sometimes that's just the case. And also Dan Tosney was in saying, top notch, lads, especially because when I'm listening to these, my wife thinks I'm on a Zoom call, so leaves me in peace.
Oh, the old ball and chain.
her indoors. I fear I'm going to have to need to start sneakily pausing and interjecting with my own opinions to keep up the illusion, though. Cheers, Dan Dosney. So those are the two best ones this week.
I was going to make porn noises there. Sophie's listening to this on a Zoom call. Anyway, on that bombshell, I will refrain from making pun noises because that's weird. On that bombshell, we shall wrap up this episode of 20 Minute Tims. I just want to say thanks so much to you guys. Thanks to everyone who leaves us reviews and tweets us and retweets the podcast. We do mean it when we say support fan media, whether it's a retweet or telling your friends or interacting with us on Twitter or promote it. Support fan media. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Goodbye, folks.
And say goodbye, Melly.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.